It is unclear exactly what was said when a high-level US delegation visited Niger last week, but it may be safely surmised that discussions were other than affable. Barely had US Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs Molly Fee and US Africa Command Chief General Michael Langley taken off, then Niger announced that, effective immediately, the entire US military presence in Niger would have to pack its kit, fold its tents, furl its flags, and go home. Niger did not mince words in so doing. Colonel Amadou Abdramane, spokesman of Niger's current military government, said the US presence in Niger was illegal and a violation of constitutional and democratic rules. Fine talk, it might reasonably be argued, from a junta which seized power in 2023 and locked up the actually elected president. As if that wasn't enough, Colonel Abdramane also articulated the Nigerian regime's fury at the alleged discourtesy of their guests. "The government of Niger," he thundered, "strongly denounces the condescending attitude combined with the threat of reprisals by the head of the American delegation against the government and the people of Niger."
I will just note that the delegation meeting included an exchange of views on a number of ideas. Niger's path to civilian democratic rule, our shared fight against terrorism, including the role of U.S. security support, the importance of Niger conducting its external partnerships in a manner consistent with international law. Those were a number of things that were discussed.
The U.S. State Department, for its part, acknowledged that direct and frank discussions had occurred. For listeners unfamiliar with the lexicon of diplomatic euphemism, this is quite serious. Not as serious as the dreaded full and frank discussions, which is usually understood as meaning that it will take some time yet to get the bloodstains out of the embassy carpet, but still pretty bad. Direct and frank discussions are likely to have involved one or other party to them being metaphorically, if not actually, dangled out of a high window by their ankles.
Help! Help!
Before we approach the reasons why Nigerian-American relations might have descended to this unhappy place, we should look at what the US is being instructed to abandon. There are two US facilities in Niger, presently home to about 650 troops. Airbase 101 at Diori Hamani International Airport in the Nigerian capital of Niamey was largely evacuated after last year's coup. Many of its personnel were relocated to Airbase 201 at Agadez in the centre of the country. Airbase 201 is of particular concern to the US.
Very young airmen doing a seemingly impossible task and building a 6,200 foot, 1.1 million square feet of asphalt runway in the middle of the Trans-Sahel region of Central Africa in the country of Niger near the city of Agadez.
More than $110 million has been spent building Airbase 201 from scratch, and it has been an important hub for drone operations targeting various Islamist militant groups at large in the region. Something in which you might think, and indeed the United States did think, Niger had a pretty vital interest.
Niger on Friday added 721 troops killed in the biggest jihadist attack in the country's history. Body bags draped in the national flag were set out on the tarmac of an Air Force base near the capital Niamey, where President Muhammad Yusufu paid tribute.
Nevertheless, this present falling out has been looming since the coup d'etat in Niger last July. The incoming military regime was initially much more focused on conducting diplomatic hostilities with France, Niger's former colonial overlord. Niger threw out France's ambassador and announced the end of all military cooperation with France. As French forces withdrew, President Emmanuel Macron harrumphed that the troops he commands have no interest in, quote, dealing with internal politics and being hostages of putschists. so there. Niger was, however, initially at least, a little more cautious in its dealings with the US. A new American ambassador, Kathleen Fitzgibbon, was allowed to take up her post in August, a few weeks after the coup, which, significantly, the United States did formally designate a coup, which under US law meant that security operations and development aid were suspended pending the restoration of democracy.
It is a signal of the United States' continued engagement in this situation. It is not a signal of any change in U.S. policy as it relates to the circumstances in Niger.
The U.S. military presence in Niger, previously about 1,100 strong, was accordingly reduced by nearly half. Since when, and following the example of other African countries which have recently hosted coups d'etat, Niger has ostentatiously sought to cultivate the friendship of Russia. The junta's Prime Minister, Ali Mohamed Lamine Zein, visited Moscow in January.
The latest fashion in Niamey, a Russian flag. Ever since the military takeover in July, this tailor started making them to show his support for Russian intervention in Niger.
This has displeased and or worried the United States. Indeed, testifying to the US Senate earlier this month, General Langley suggested that a number of countries in Africa were on the verge of being effectively captured by Russia.
I would say the Russian Federation's narrative drowned out the U.S. governments in the past years. They were excelling. The Russian Federation, not just through Wagner, stoked a lot of the instability across the Sahel. They did this through misinformation, disinformation campaigns.
Even more vexingly, from an American perspective, Niger, the world's seventh largest producer of uranium, has also been flirting with Iran, which Prime Minister Zein has also visited. However, the Americans have not left yet. As of this broadcast, the Stars and Stripes still flies over Airbase 201. It is very far from impossible that the Nigerian junta is engaging in an altogether unsubtle shadow play, that the visit to Niamey by Assistant Secretary Fee and General Langley was more or less designed to cause a crisis. This would explain why Niger's military leader, General Abdurrahmane Tchiani, decided he had better things to do than greet the Americans and punted the meeting to Prime Minister Zein. The theory here is that while the Nigerian junta may be obnoxious, they are not daft, and that their heavily trailed outreach to Moscow and Tehran has a certain theatrical aspect, that Niger is seeking to leverage these new associations for advantage with the United States. Another possibility, if one less generous to the Nigerians, is that Niger has been gulled into irritating the Americans by Russia and Iran. Either way, and not for the first time, the United States finds itself in a position of what might be deemed virtuous disadvantage. For all that it does have a lengthy and wretched record of dealing with unpleasant regimes abroad, the US does still oblige itself to at least pretend it has standards. This is not a handicap to which Russia subjects itself. For Monocle Radio, I'm Andrew Muller.